Last year, the national rental vacancy rate dipped to its lowest level on record, 0.9%. And at the same time, the 2021 census showed that over a million houses were empty on census night. That is a lot of unused accommodation. Some local councils are trying to ease the pressure themselves. They're doing letter drops to owners or hiking the rates. Matthew Hatcher is the mayor of Yirrabadalla Shire on the New South Wales south coast, and they've been taking some steps in this regard. Matthew, welcome to Life Matters.
Good morning, Hilary. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. Give me a sense of the scale of the housing crisis in your shire.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing there is that it is a crisis. We've come off the back of the 2019-2020 Black Summer bushfires. We lost 500 houses in our shire here, 500 houses to the shire to the south of us as well, and hundreds to the north also. Just off the back of that, obviously COVID hit and we had a huge supply chain issue. Lockdowns obviously slowed the process, inundation of DAs trying to rebuild as well. So all those things compiled with the floodings and everything else that we found ourselves with house prices doubling over the last 2 years, rental prices going up 30 to 40% in most areas, and obviously a lack of supply, people moving from the cities down here. So it has become quite a crisis in our area.
Yeah, so you've got houses filling up and you can't rebuild the ones that were lost. You wrote a letter asking out-of-town property owners to consider renting out their property, so people who have a second home or a holiday home. How many empty homes are there in your area that was meant to tackle?
Well, unfortunately, we lead the state in these ghost houses that we talk about. Now, our area is quite a tourist destination. We're 2 hours from Canberra, 3.5 hours from Sydney. In those peak holiday periods, we need a lot of those short-term rentals to house the tourists that come here. And a lot of the houses are taken up by family homes, people who have been coming here for many years over those holiday periods. And obviously, we want to encourage them to continue. But I guess the letter was aimed at those that might have multiple investment properties and might be using them for those sort of short-term accommodations to just think about the community long-term and maybe free up one of those or, you know, whatever they could do, anyone that could do anything to get a bit more supply on the market for us, just to take a bit of pressure off. We had great response from it. I've got to be honest. We had well over 40 houses come back onto the market, in the rental market. Now, the letter asked for people to contact agents alone to go through the normal, protocols of renting your house out. So security was there and everything else. And so we don't have exact numbers, but we know council alone had over 100 phone calls and emails of people wanting to help. We had houses being offered up for 3 to 6 months from people that were fully furnished for free for people who might be struggling. We know DCJ got over 10 houses back onto the social housing market from it as well. We've also got some infrastructure projects that are just finished up here, big projects. So we've had some more houses come back on from that as well. But overall, it's been a great success.
And Matthew, why do you think it was so successful, just the individual homeowners' letter drop? Did people just not know how big the problem was until it was laid out for them, or didn't know how they could be part of the solution?
I think it's both of those things. Really, I think over the last couple of years, we've all had our head down and really in our space trying to just survive the whole country. Down here in particular, we've got a lot of Canberrans, and after the bushfires, there's nowhere that stood up more to support this region and come down here and spend money and support every local business was those tourists and those people who have been coming here for many years. So I think really just pointing it out to them was one thing, but also I think overall, I think people want to help. And if they found that that's the way they could do it, and some people just couldn't do it, financially, it is sometimes taking a bit of a hit and you might lose 20-30% on your investment for a year or two. But I think for the long term, for the community and for this region, it's something that we had to, at least it's something we had to trial. And there's lots of other measures that we're looking at doing, and we're talking to the state government about things that we think could help alleviate a little bit of that pressure. But yeah, I think people just want to help where they can.
Yeah, and it's interesting, isn't it, in coastal towns, because sometimes you might have that income coming into individuals from short stay accommodation, but when the tourists come, there's no one to make their coffees and no one to serve their meals at restaurants because no one can afford to work and live there.
Yeah, I mean, my rent alone's gone up over $200 a week in the last year. It is something that's hit everyone down here. And while it's great, you know, it's great to have this money coming in and this region being promoted, especially post bushfires, you know, to see the amount of money that's coming in and being spent. But that's right, we don't have space for staff. You know, council have many vacancies on our books because we can't house the people who want to come down here and work. And it goes the same all through the hospitality and tourism industry. You know, everyone's struggling for staff because of that, because there's nowhere to stay.
And Matthew, what would you like to see if you could get one or two top things happening to ease this housing crisis in your area? What would it be?
Well, there's three things we wrote to the state government on, and you know, we've got big infrastructure projects that have just happened, just finished up, and we've got more that are on the horizon as well. We've got a regional hospital being built. So we know there's staff coming to build those projects. And if the state government knows that, then why aren't we building housing for them now? They can use that worker accommodation. And when they leave, we can flip that over into social housing. You know, the state government have let us down for many years on this. And we are just seeing little wins here and there that we think they could pull levers to help us out. And that's all that we're really asking. You know, they've got a 4-year plan. 127,000 houses, what they announced in the budget. We don't know how many of those are going to be put here in this shire, but if there's any little win we can get to alleviate pressure is what we're asking for. And we've wrote to the state government, and on everything that we've asked for them to look at, they've said no. So we'll continue that pressure and continue writing. It's just something that we're going to have to keep doing until, you know, something happens.
Indeed. Matthew, thanks so much for your time, and all the best for pushing that through.
Thanks so much, Hillary.
Matthew Hatcher, the Mayor of Yirrabadalla Shire on the New South Wales South Coast. So many people texting in with thoughts on this. How about all the empty hotels around Australia? They say, I'm in a rural area with no rentals, homes for sale, grabbed by investors, and 3 closed pubs. Why don't we open those rooms again? Even with shared bathrooms, surely it's better than living in cars or parks. Cooking can be done as per institution in the great facilities downstairs. Councils need to get on it. Well, what can be done? Dr. Michael Fotheringham is the Managing Director of AHURI, the Australian Housing and Urban Research Institute. Michael, welcome back to Life Matters.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
It's great to chat to you. We've got a few minutes left and I want to look at some of the options that councils are taking or that are available to us. Victoria introduced a vacant residential land tax in 2017, which was applied to 16 local government areas around Greater Melbourne. Do those kinds of taxes work?
Well, they certainly can, and I've heard calls for that sort of program to be rolled out nationally. I think, you know, as we've just heard, the tourist-intensive areas is where this hits hardest. So, you know, approaches that really do encourage releasing property to the private rental market rather than to the short-term letting is certainly something we'd welcome.
How effectively is that kind of tax working at the moment? I mean, it's been operating in Victoria for a few years. Is it working?
That's a great question. Don't have the data. I'd love to be able to tell you that as a result of that levy, you know, X number of properties were made available for long-term tenants, but unfortunately we don't have that data at this stage.
What about things like perhaps Brisbane City Council's putting an extra 50% charge on rates bills for short stay properties? Would that encourage people to put them back on the private rental market?
I very much think it would, yes. I mean, one of the things we saw, you know, over the last couple of years with the pandemic, you know, a lot of property had left the private rental system to be used as short-term lettings. So investment properties, instead of being leased out to people to live in, became used as holiday apartments or holiday houses. And with the pandemic and the lockdowns that we experienced, particularly in 2020, that model didn't work. So a whole lot of property came back into the private rental system. And that actually helped to ensure that rents didn't skyrocket during the initial phase of the pandemic. But of course, after the lockdowns, the business model shifted again, and for a lot of people, a lot of investors moved their properties back into short-term letting platforms, and so there was a whole exodus from the system of a whole lot of stock. That coincided with flooding that also took a whole lot of housing out of our national stock. So we've got this enormous shortage, which has led to that vacancy rate you were talking about earlier.
Yeah, 10% of all residential dwellings unoccupied, so it's over 1 million homes. There's
Well, there's an interesting thing there. I mean, 1 million dwellings sounds incredibly compelling as a figure. In fact, per capita, it's less than at the previous census. And it does include a number of other things. So the short-term letting is certainly playing a big and increasing part of that. But there are also derelict houses, houses that, that are currently under renovation or refurbishment or in the process of a knockdown rebuild or other sort of development site. So there are a number, there's always a lot of properties in that sort of pipeline generally, and also properties where there's contested ownership, there's an estate dispute or what have you that, that leads to a vacancy. And then just the transfer of properties between owners. There's a vacant period in between one and the other. So there's a little bit of noise in that to consider. It's not just a million luxury holiday houses sitting empty while you know we have a huge homeless problem. But it is a growing problem with the short-term letting platforms taking over. And certainly in international jurisdictions, we've seen caps on or restrictions or, in fact, bans on short-term letting platforms. So there's certainly room to be a bit tighter on them than we are at the moment.
Yes, indeed. Well, and if you've got those supply chain pipeline blockages, then all those knockdown rebuilds and renovations that you mentioned take longer and therefore exacerbate the problem, don't they?
Exactly right. So a knockdown rebuild, what might have been a 9-month project, you know, a couple of years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, is now a 15, 18-month project. And that's, you know, that's more time being vacant and the displacement effect of that household, you know, staying somewhere else is again squeezing the market further.
Some interesting texts on this. Michael, Justine says, I'm in Hobart. The house next door is permanently empty. My neighbour lives with his girlfriend now and only comes back for an hour each week. And another person says, ghost houses not being used for months on end during a chronic housing shortage, bring back squatters' rights. And like before, that'll sort it. I'm not sure what golden age they're referring to there, Michael, but it raises that question, doesn't it? Could squatting become more prevalent because it seems like an entirely reasonable approach for people who are desperate?
Well, that's right. I mean, you do hear some anecdotal stories, particularly I think in those communities where there are a number of those properties of owners coming back and finding that someone has been staying in their home without their knowledge. But I don't think we have a large-scale squatting population in this country that just hasn't been the history here. We certainly hear about it in Europe, but it's much less prevalent in Australia. There may be a turning point ahead of us.
Well, and speaking of turning points, I mean, we've talked before about the approach in Australia to property as an investment as opposed to shelter. Do we need to choose? I mean, is there a way to have our cake and eat it too that we can see working in other places around the world, Michael?
Well, we need to balance. And at the moment, the balance is heavily in favour of treating housing as property, as investment vehicle, as a financial wealth accumulation vehicle ahead of housing as shelter. And we need to better balance those different needs. And I guess one of the things I tend to think of here is that people need shelter. They need a home. People choose to invest in property for financial gain, but they could also invest in other things. So, you know, there's a degree of choice here that we're favouring over need, and that's tricky.
It is indeed. Well, what are some ways that you might encourage more people to rent out their homes? Do you need some kind of government subsidy for that?
Well, the vacancy levies is certainly one mechanism. Other sort of constraints on the short-term letting, you know, have been tried internationally and been quite successful. There's certainly room for that. But I think the point that you made earlier, that if you want to go and stay at a holiday home and you know, have a nice time, you also want to be able to get a coffee when you're there and have a meal and so on. So the people who are preparing those coffees and meals need somewhere to live or you won't have one. And the holiday destination becomes a bit less desirable if the key workers aren't housed, or if they're having to travel in, the constraints of that are quite real. So it's actually getting people to think a little more broadly about the sort of communities we're creating, not just about individual properties.
But as you say, Michael, I mean, if an individual homeowner is probably not going to be swayed by not being able to get one coffee on a trip, there's got to be a broader structure at play, doesn't there, that incentivises more people to shift their properties.
That's absolutely right, and that's why those levies and so on start to really start to encourage sharper thinking on this.
sharper thinking. I like that idea. Just finally, Michael, I think we're going to see a growth in population over the coming years as migration levels return to normal and international students start to return, hopefully, in their usual numbers. Is this a problem that's going to get worse, or will many of those people come back to already purpose-built properties, for example, student accommodation in cities?
Well, we do have some vacancy in student accommodation. That's probably the one exception in the system, particularly in Sydney and Melbourne, in locations around the universities. There's a bit of vacancy there, and in fact, that's protecting our vacancy rate. So, in fact, it's worse than the numbers you've been hearing suggest. But one of the real challenges we have in building more housing was we have a twofold challenge of the supply chain of the material goods needed to build housing, timber framing being a key example, where international supply chains are constrained and will continue to be for some time yet. So building is going to continue to be slow. But we also have a workforce challenge, and a traditional solution to adding to the workforce for skilled and semi-skilled jobs in construction is through migration. And that's not going to work if those migrants don't have anywhere to live. So we've got to actually coordinate our policies on this to address what is actually a really complex problem.
Yes, indeed. Newish government, possibly a newish approach. We'll wait and see. Dr. Michael Fotheringham, thanks so much for joining us on Life Matters.
Thank you very much, Hilary.
Michael's the Managing Director of AHURI, the Australian Housing and Urban Research Institute. And you heard earlier, too, from Matthew Hatcher, who's the Mayor of Yorubadalla Shire on the New South Wales South Coast.
Think bigger about the world we live in. Ask your smart speaker to play ABC RN.